The following program, The Russ Belville Show, is intended for responsible adults only. We advocate to the repeal of marijuana prohibition for adults. We discuss the science, culture, and controversy about America's marijuana laws. We do not advocate any illegal activity and encourage all listeners to learn their state and federal marijuana laws. Opinions and claims made by guests and advertisers on The Russ Belville Show are their own, and The Russ Belville Show cannot be held legally responsible for their validity or reliability. Viewer discretion is advised.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it,
and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
From the promise of legalization. To the agony of prohibition.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
The Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Yeah, I hear you had a question for me.
Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Belville.
All right, good day, Turkettes. Welcome. It is Monday, February 11th, 2013, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. Welcome to the show, one of three shows we'll have this week. Thursday and Friday, we'll be making our way on the Amtrak Cascade Starlight down to Los Angeles, California for the High Times Medical Cannabis Cup, the second annual. We'll be bringing you live streaming coverage Saturday and Sunday, so make sure and check it out right here all day Saturday and Sunday, 420radio.org. And for our 420 Radio VIP members, you'll get after-hours coverage Saturday night of the concert that's going on there. Redman and The Game are in concert. And then Sunday night, the awards ceremony and backstage interviews for our VIP members only. So get your membership by going to 420radio.org, click on Join Us, and you'll see how you can sign up for as little as $4.20 per month. On today's show, we got all sorts of interesting things to cover in the Radical Rant today. We're going to take a break from talking about marijuana and actually talk about drugs. Yeah, we're going to talk about methamphetamine and a new means of production that is stymieing the efforts of law enforcement to try to put a dent in a serious and harmful and toxic and addictive substance that is methamphetamine. Also on today's show, it's Roots Monday for our Daily Toker Tunes, and later tonight we're going to be featuring on the new Viper Hour some early 1900s jazz. We got all sorts of great stuff to bring you on tonight's show, and we'll preview some of that with some great music from the I'm missing the name of the quintet, but we will get to that at our Roots Money. My apologies. The song is called Stoned, though, so we will get to that coming right up. Also on the show today, we're going to talk about the High Times Medical Cannabis Cup moving to Glendale instead of the LA Center Studios where it was last year. I'm trying to get someone from High Times on the line at half past to talk about it. Of course, the East Coast offices are, you know, snowed in with the blizzard, so we'll see what happens there. And then on the West Coast, we're trying to get Dave Bean in stock online, so we'll see what happens there. Before we get to all that, we've got our 420 Radio News. Great news coming out of Kentucky and Pennsylvania. Bad news coming out of Nevada. And a sad story out of Texas that could have been avoided if marijuana were legal. I'm Russ Belville. It's the Russ Belville Show here on 420radio.org. We'll be right back.
We'll be right back after these messages from our 420 friendly sponsors. Support these advertisers because their ad money goes straight to the Russ Belville Show. You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Cast your eyes up to the skies. What is it to live and die?
K California is the center of marijuana consciousness. That's why High Times Magazine is returning to the Golden State for our second High Times Medical Cannabis Cup in Los Angeles. That's right. Come to LA Center Studios on February 16th and 17th for this high-flying event. Meet the medical cannabis industry, visit our extra special medicating area, and sample the best cannabis products of Southern California. There'll be cultivation seminars and presentations about getting pot legalized, not just in California, but everywhere. Be there on Saturday evening when we host a Rock'em Sock'em concert with surprise musical guests. And don't forget Sunday night and the High Times Medical Cannabis Cup Awards when we honor the best sativa, best indica, best hybrid, best concentrate, and best edibles of the LA medical cannabis scene. Plus, we present the High Times Lifetime Achievement Award to marijuana superstar Tommy Chong. Come to the City of the Angels on February 16th and 17th for a High Times cannabis celebration. Go to MedCanCup.com for details. Live the high life. Be proud of who you are. Be part of the growing cannabis community. The High Times Cannabis Cup in Amsterdam is recognized as the world's premier marijuana competition. Over the years, thousands of judges have attended the Cannabis Cup, sampling the best indicas, best sativas, best hybrids, and the best hash on the planet. In the April 2013 issue of High Times, read all about the sensational 25th Cannabis Cup that took place in November. Find out about the latest killer strains. Decide what to grow in your garden this year. Celebrate 25 years of the Cannabis Cup in this very special issue of High Times Magazine. On sale now.
Now it's time for your 420 Radio News for Monday, February 11th, 2013. I'm Russ Belville. Hemp bill clears committee unanimously, from the Courier-Journal. A bill that would legalize growing hemp for industrial use cleared a Kentucky State Legislative Committee Monday with a unanimous vote. The passage means the bill can now be considered by the full state Senate. Regardless of what happens at the state level, legalization would also require the federal government to reclassify industrial hemp as legal. Currently, it is included with marijuana, its fellow member in the cannabis family. U.S. Senator Rand Paul of Kentucky testified recently before the committee and said that if the state legalizes hemp, he's going to introduce federal legislation or seek a waiver from President Barack Obama to reclassify hemp. The Kentucky State Police opposed the bill, saying it would make enforcement efforts against marijuana, which looks identical to hemp, more difficult. Also opposing the bill are the Kentucky Narcotics Officers Association. Pennsylvania legislator to reintroduce marijuana legalization bill from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. A Pennsylvania legislator plans to reintroduce a bill that would legalize marijuana in the Commonwealth. Representative Dalen Leach, a Democrat from the Philadelphia suburbs, is scheduled to hold a press conference this afternoon in Harrisburg to discuss his legislation. Supporters say the state could generate much-needed revenue by legalizing and taxing the drug in a manner similar to alcohol. Leach has said marijuana should be also legal as a medical treatment for patients suffering terminal illnesses. Bill calls for random drug tests of Nevada welfare recipients, from the Las Vegas Review-Journal. Rather than punishing drug users, State Senator James Settlemyer said this week he wants to, quote, get them some help, end quote, through a bill to require people receiving public aid to submit to random drug tests. But Settlemyer had no other legislators to co-sign as sponsors of his bill, Senate Bill 89. That is usually an indication that there is little support for the bill. Under the senator's bill, which was introduced Wednesday, if an oral drug test found someone was using an illicit substance, then that person would have to enroll in a rehabilitation program or lose benefits. If after rehabilitation the person still tested positive for drug use, then benefits such as food stamps, Medicaid, or welfare would be taken. A 1996 welfare law gives states the option of requiring drug tests as a condition of their residents receiving welfare benefits. He said his bill would not affect people who have permission to use marijuana or other drugs for medical reasons. Settlemyer added that American Indians are required by federal law to submit to drug and alcohol tests as a condition of receiving welfare, and other people should have the same requirement. Crime Time. Messed up marijuana deal cost teen his life, from the Star-Telegram in Fort Worth, Texas. Shane Zachary Austin, age 21, was sentenced to 30 years in prison for fatally wounding Miles Raskin, age 17. Austin and another person met Raskin and two others at the Whataburger to buy marijuana from them. Austin got in the back seat of the car with Raskin, snatched the baggie of marijuana, and fled. As Austin ran toward his car, Raskin gave chase, and Austin turned around and fired three shots at him. Detectives found Austin standing on the back patio with a marijuana pipe in his hand and the odor of burning marijuana in the air. Austin was arrested on suspicion of marijuana possession and taken for questioning in the shooting. In other news, a 21-year-old Fort Worth man who wanted to drink a beer on his back patio was found at a local convenience store, showing ID to an adult clerk in order to purchase the beer, which he later took home and drank on his own property without incident. News from the Limerick Leader in Ireland. Limerick man hid cannabis in the attic of his home. A South Hill man cops did a sale. The pot in his home he did fail. To keep it well hidden, the judge said, "You're kidding," and gave him 2 years in the jail. Senate advances measure opposing marijuana from KTVB.com in Boise. Idaho legislators are pushing back against measures in western states where voters recently relaxed marijuana laws. The Senate Affairs Committee unanimously voted in favor Friday of a resolution opposing marijuana use in any form. The resolution also urges President Barack Obama and the Justice Department to enforce existing federal marijuana laws. That's your 420 Radio News for Monday, February 11th, 2013. I'm Russ Belville. When we come back, we go behind the headlines and take a look at The Hill, the magazine of Capitol Hill and all the legislators and lobbyists that read it, and how the marijuana lobby is no longer getting laughed at in the halls of power in Washington, D.C. This is The Russ Belville Show on 420radio.org. We'll be right back after this.
The law offices of Omar Figueroa would like to remind you to stand up for your rights. Please do not give up your precious liberties. There's nothing wrong with standing up for our constitutional rights, and in fact, it's the only way to honor the Constitution that recognizes our natural rights. Treat law enforcement with respect and respect the Constitution by standing up for your rights. If you are detained or arrested, stand up for your rights by repeating, "I respectfully invoke all my legal and constitutional rights. I do not consent to any search and seizure. I want to remain silent, and I want to speak to my attorney, Omar Figueroa." Omar Figueroa has more than a decade of experience in federal and California courts and graduated from Yale University, Stanford Law School, and Trial Lawyers College. Please contact the law offices of Omar Figueroa at 415-489-0420 or 707-829-0215 or on the web at www.omarfigueroa.com.
I'm Sub Cool from Team Green Avenger. At TGAGenetics.com, we are working on the leading edge of medical strains. Our strains are rigorously tested for THC, CBD, THCV, and other critical cannabinoids. Know your grow. Check out our genetic diversity at TGAGenetics.com, the home of Jelly Bean, Jack the Ripper, Vortex, and other award-winning cannabis strains.
All right, folks, time for us to go behind the headlines here, and it's just about 14 after the hour. And I was turned on to this story that's in TheHill.com, and The Hill is kind of an inside the Beltway Washington, D.C. blog for, you know, political insiders and wonks and lobbyists and so forth. All the congressional staffers read it. It's, you know, kind of what's going on in the political scene. And there was an article up there posted recently entitled "Doors Swing Open for Advocates of Marijuana Legalization on Capitol Hill." Now, the first thing that caught my eye about this was the byline of the person who wrote it. It's written by one Kevin Bogardus. Yes, Kevin Bogardus. Anyway, Kevin Bogardis is writing here in Doors Swing Open for Advocates of Marijuana Legalization on Capitol Hill, and he interviews a lot of our, you know, leaders in marijuana legalization. He's got a lengthy quote from Alan St. Pierre along the lines of, you know, before they used to laugh at us when we would, you know, offer them political action committee money. Now they want to talk to us. Now they realize where the people are heading. But I wanted to address specifically a part in this article where they're interviewing Steve Fox and Roy Kaufman from MPP. Let me just get to this part. Steve Fox, director of government relations for the Marijuana Policy Project, said the group is planning more aggressive fundraising through its political action committee. The group is aiming to get more than $150,000 in contributions to its PAC for the 2014 election cycle, topping its previous record of more than $119,000 in donations for the 2006 campaign. Further, the PAC is changing its name to the Marijuana Policy Project PAC, dropping a prior reference to medical marijuana. Fox, who lobbies for the National Cannabis Industry Association as well, said the name change signals that a broader reform agenda is now on the table. Quote, "The group has shifted and we now see members of Congress wanting to regulate marijuana like alcohol. The name change reflects that our activity on the federal level is no longer just about medical marijuana," end quote, Fox said. So that's great news there. You know, in Washington, D.C., we're starting to see real money come in for political action committee, and they no longer feel the need to couch that in terms of medical support. It used to be the only way you could bring up marijuana in Washington, D.C. is if it had the word medical before it. And even then it was laughed at. Now we can drop the medical. We can go for full civil rights. We can go for equality for marijuana smokers like beer drinkers. That's great. However, in this Hill article, it continues. In a November 28, 2012 memo obtained by The Hill, Rob Campia, MPP's executive director, said Oregon should wait until 2016 for a marijuana legalization ballot drive when another presidential election would boost turnout among young voters. Quote, "Given that an initiative in November 2014 would be almost certain to lose, MPP would contribute no money toward a signature drive, paid staff, or advertising during the 2013 to 2014 cycle," Campia wrote to Oregon activists. Campia said MPP is interested in passing an Oregon ballot initiative in 2016 and would contribute $700,000 to the effort. Fox said, quote, "We can't tell our funders in good faith that they should fund a 2014 initiative. We are not saying it's impossible to win. We are just saying it's a completely unnecessary risk. The only thing that can keep Oregon from winning this in 2016 is a loss in 2014, end quote. I disagree. I completely disagree with that analysis. Why does this have to be a zero-sum game? Why does this have to be an either-or? Either you go with MPP and do what they say and spend the money their way and go for 2016, or you try for 2014 and it's going to fail. Why can't it be both? What is the problem with people if they can put together a professional organization and they have the money to be able to do it and they can get serious funding for it? What is the problem with them funding a signature drive and an initiative for 2014? And why couldn't MPP be educating, which MPP has said they want to form an educational campaign in 2013 and 2014? What's the problem? If you fund an educational campaign in 2013 and 2014 leading to 2016 and someone else gets something together for 2014 and they pass it, you what? You accidentally educated people to pass it too early? Is that the problem? It would be passed by somebody else that doesn't have MPP on their name? Is that the issue? I don't see that a failure in 2014 necessarily means a defeat in 2016. We had a failure in California in 2010. It led to successes in Washington and Colorado. I listened to an interview with Neil Franklin from LEAP on Drug Truth Network, airing earlier on 420 Radio, where Neil Franklin talks about it being softening up the beachhead in order to get those gains in 2016. A loss in Oregon in 2014 is by no means guaranteed, although it depends on who you ask. Campia says it would almost be certain to lose. But Fox says it's not impossible to win. So I'm not sure which analysis we should accept there. But I think a smartly done initiative drive does wonders for educating the public, first of all. And second of all, could win. All of this theoretical posturing we're talking about, what could win, what couldn't win, fails to mention the fact that 193 Oregonians per month are going to be arrested for marijuana. 193 a month. Do we let another 24 months of that pass when it's possible to stop it by 2014? Now, I don't disagree with a lot of MPP's analysis on this situation. I completely agree that passing something in 2016 is a slam dunk, but I don't think it becomes any less of a slam dunk for trying in 2014. To say that would be to say that what we tried in 2012 that just got 47%, the highest vote ever for a legalization initiative in Oregon, was doing something to make it fail. When I don't think so. Anytime we get this in front of the voters, anytime we're voting on it, we are winning. Only way we are losing is by not talking about it and giving more time for our opponents to regroup, sell their Project Sam bullshit, and make it harder for us to pass something later. And again, I'm not exactly in disagreement with what MPP says here. I just don't like the threatening tactics for anybody else who might disagree with them to try something earlier. Let's smoke on it.
Oh, have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. Have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. If he said he swam to China, he would sell you South Carolina. Then you know you're talking to that reefer man.
I'm John Bon Jovi, and I've been given a script to talk to you about drugs, rock and roll, having fun, a good time, and all that good stuff. Well, I'll tell you what, drugs is not a part of my everyday routine. It's not everyday fun. It's not good for you. All right, so listen, think twice before you do drugs, because there ain't no winners out there doing it.
Russ Belville Show brings you the best in daily Toker tunes every weekday. Each day features a different genre, including Roots Monday.
Folks, here's a story about Mindy the Moocher.
Electric Tuesday. Irie Wednesday.
Summer ganja planter, call me the ganja planter.
Grooving Thursday.
Don't you wanna get high?
And Rockin' Fridays. Then on weekends, we mix them all together in our weekend music party. Everyone knows music and marijuana go together, so let's wind up our 20 after break with the Russ Belville Show's Daily Toker Tunes, the best in pod-safe 420 music from around the web. Today is Roots Monday, featuring the blues, country, folk, and jazz music that birthed the modern sounds we enjoy today. You can get downloads and more information about all our daily Toker tunes by visiting music.radicalrust.com. Now, sit back and enjoy your daily Toker tunes.
All right, folks, my apologies for earlier. I should have known this name right off the tip of my tongue. The Coleman Hawkins Quintet. The only thing I could think of was Hawk. They have a song called The Hawk Flies High, and that kept running through my head, and I couldn't think of Coleman. But anyway, Coleman Hawkins Quintet. Reason that didn't come in the list, we did a new upgrade for the Librimator, and there's an option I checked that reset all the playlists every hour, so I couldn't even look it up. We'll get that all fixed. Anyway, Coleman Hawkins Quintet. Coleman Hawkins started playing tenor saxophone and was as known as a jazz recording artist, dating all the way back to the decade of the 1910s. His influence goes all the way through the 1960s, a five-decade career that spanned all different areas of jazz music. And I thought this recording, this one's from, I believe, 1964, an old VHS recording of the Coleman Hawkins Quintet. And it's a song that, of course, is perfect for our Roots Monday. It's called Stone.
Thank you. That's what everybody says these days. It's fun. It's recreational. Some even call it medicine. But every year, millions of young people find out that marijuana is extremely dangerous. Every year, they find out that it's deadly. Marijuana smoke is lethal and toxic. Don't believe anything you've ever heard positive about smoking marijuana. It will kill you. Really. It's really gonna kill you. Don't smoke it. It will really, really kill you. Seriously. It's gonna kill you.
Cannabis community includes a diverse set of activists and nonprofits working to end the prohibition of marijuana. We take the time to hear the stories of reform on the Russ Belville Show's Cannabis Community Chat.
Welcome back, everybody, and it's 32 after the hour. We are going to preview once again the High Times Medical Cannabis Cup because we are headed there this weekend. We'll be there Saturday and Sunday, the 16th and 17th, starting at noon Pacific time, running till they close the floor, which I believe is 6 or 7 p.m. We'll be there both days, Saturday and Sunday. You can tune in right here at 420radio.org for our live coverage from the floor. Usually at these events, what I do is I have the booth set up, and we do some live resets at the top of the hour. So if you want to see what's happening, just check out at the top of the hour, see what's happening with us. We go till about 20 after, for obvious reasons. And then from that point on, I play videos that I've taken from the previous hour around the floor. I get to interview people in the medicating areas. I get to interview the vendors, show you the latest gear, and so forth. So we got throughout the whole event, there's always something new to check out there. Plus, we have people that'll stop by our booth for live interviews and chats. So check that out all this weekend right here at 420radio.org. Also, if you're a VIP member, you get more. As usual, VIP members on Saturday night will get to follow me as we go backstage at the concert for The Game and Redman and other musical guests there at the High Times Medical Cannabis Cup. And on Sunday night, the High Times Medical Cannabis Cup Awards will be there for the ceremony. We'll be there backstage with the winners and Tommy Chong, who will be receiving his Lifetime Achievement Award from High Times Magazine. So we'll be backstage with Tommy as well. You want to check that out, but to get it, you'll have to be a VIP. So to become a VIP, go to 420radio.org and look for Join Us, and you can find the VIP memberships. You can join for as little as $4.20 a month. Comes out through PayPal or your credit and debit card, and all the proceeds support 420radio.org. We are a nonprofit organization. All the funds that we get just keep this thing working, keep this thing rolling. So if you like this kind of coverage of 420 events, and we will have a exclusive live 420 event every month here at 420 Radio, then you'll want to definitely become a supporter. Help us out. Know that the money that you're donating is going toward independent marijuana media, getting the truth out to people, and providing a platform for marijuana reform activists and cannabis lovers all across the country. Now, the big news about the Medical Cannabis Cup is that it has moved locations. Last year, it was at the LA Center Studios, just right there in downtown LA. It was going to be there again this year up until this Friday, as far as I'm aware. They had to change the location. It has been moved to Glendale, California. It's at the Glendale Studios, 1239 South Glendale Avenue in Glendale, California. If you go to medcancup.com, you can get more information on the location, how to get tickets. The two-day VIP tickets are $85 with a $3.12 fee online for purchase. Your two-day VIP ticket gets you entrance to the expo, the concerts, the award show, both days, Saturday and Sunday, a gift bag, t-shirt, access to VIP lounge, and separate VIP medical wristband registration. So that's the full meal deal if you want to get that, $85. Otherwise, the Saturday pass is $40. The Sunday pass is $30, and these are entrants to just the expo and the concert. So, oh, and if you are a medical cannabis recommendation holder in the state of California, you don't have to have a medical recommendation or card to come to the event, but you do need your doctor's recommendation or California card if you plan to consume cannabis on site in accordance with California law. Tickets are non-refundable, but they are transferable. So if you get the two-day pass, you could go one day, your friend could go another day. That would be fine. The event opens at 12 noon at the Glendale Studios, and by 1:30, they're going to begin having their panels. Now, in addition to having the most amazing expo floor, where every year I find something new that is so totally cool, but in addition to that, you also get to learn at these expo panels from some of the greatest experts in marijuana law reform, cannabis horticulture, and marijuana media will be on stage. At 1:30 p.m., there's a Legalize LA panel. That's going to feature Dave Bienenstock, the West Coast editor, James Devine, Jay Lederman, Dale Gieringer, the head of California Normal, and Candace Hawes, the head of Orange County Normal. At 3 o'clock, our very own Danny Danko, the host of Free Weed with Danny Danko, will be recording a live edition of Free Weed featuring DJ Short, Kyle Cushman, Swerve, Rick Frommer, and other special guests. So a live recording of Free Weed, which will, of course, replay here on 420 Radio at its regular time. At 5 o'clock on Saturday, we got a patients panel featuring Dr. Christian Pioletti, Fred Gardner, love Fred Gardner, Martin Lee, author Martin Lee, Debbie Goldsberry, longtime California activist, a freedom fighter of the year winner, and Marla James will be on the patients panel at 5 o'clock. At 6 o'clock, that's when the homegrown party starts, and that's where all the VIPs can tune in here to 420 Radio and start really enjoying things. The homegrown party with opening act Rhyme Addicts, followed at 7 o'clock by Redman, and 8 o'clock, The Game. Make sure you're a VIP member if you want to tune into those. Then on Sunday, February 17th, again, we start at noon Pacific. At 1 o'clock, we're going to be screening the movie The House I Live In. The Jarecki film is just amazing. The House I Live In, all about the drug war. If you haven't seen it, definitely check out that screening. On 3 o'clock, we have an edibles panel featuring Elise McDonough, the author of the High Times Cannabis Cookbook, Chef Mike DeLeo, Sherry Sicard, another person, I can't remember the name of her book, but another cannabis cookbook writer. She's been on our show before. And Kenny Morrison will be there at 3 o'clock as well. At 4 o'clock, and this panel, they've had this the last few cannabis cups I've been to, always packs in the people. It's always standing room only. A dab panel, that's concentrates for some of you folks. Dabs panel featuring Bobby Black, Dr. Alan Frankel, Wheezy Dabs, Kenny Morrow, and Addison DeMora. So check that out. Then DJ Ideal takes over at 5 o'clock, Karma to Burn. We've got 5:30, a Nico Escondido cultivation seminar. Then we go Bishop Magnetic with Zuma at 6 o'clock. At 7:30, the High Times Medical Cannabis Cups Award Show begins. And again, available for streaming for VIPs only here on 420 Radio. Top Sativas, Indicas, Hybrids, Edibles, and more. And we'll be featuring Tommy Chong accepting the Lifetime Achievement Award. Music will be provided by DJ Crystal Ellis. All the information you need is at HighTimesMedCanCup.com. And again, we're moving to the Glendale Studios in Glendale, California. Check the MedCanCup.com for the map. We'll be streaming there Saturday and Sunday. And that means we'll also be having a bit of a schedule change here this week at 420 Radio. On Thursday and Friday, repeats of the Russ Belleville Show. And on Friday night of the Herb Thrasher Flower Hour. The Big Daddy Fink Show will be new because he pre-records those. So we'll have that new on Thursday. And if I can, I will try to break in from the Amtrak train while I'm taking the Coast Starlight down to L.A. They got Wi-Fi, they got electricity, and they got a bar car. So we'll see what we can do, see if we can bring you some live coverage from Amtrak. All right, we're going to take a little break here, and also want to remind you that our coverage of High Times Medical Cannabis Cup is brought to you in part by Woodpipes. That's right, Woodpipes Smoke Shop and Speakeasy. For more information on Woodpipes, you can email them at woodpipes@yahoo.com. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, time for a little radical rant, but not about weed, We're going to talk about speed. Yeah, we're actually going to talk about drugs for once. A very horrifying new development in the fight against methamphetamine that you ought to know about. And what does it have to do with marijuana? You know I'll find the link.
You cut people, you smoke trees till you get what you need now. Designer drugs are meant to smoke to get through the day. You always get them so high.
We'll be right back after these messages from our 420 friendly sponsors. Support these advertisers because their ad money goes straight to the Russ Belville Show. You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
All truth passes through three stages. First, it is ridiculed.
There was one question that was voted on that ranked fairly high. And that was whether legalizing marijuana would improve the economy and job creation. And I don't know what this says about the online audience. But
second, it is violently opposed.
DEA is running over a guy in a walker. My money.
Third, it is accepted as being self-evident. Percent support legalizing taxing marijuana. Half in U.S. support legalizing marijuana use, poll finds. Record high, 50% of Americans favor legalizing marijuana use. Guatemala's president plans to legalize drugs. World leaders urge end to failed drug war. It's increasingly normal to support marijuana legalization. Support marijuana legalization by joining Normal today at normal.org. Together, we will win.
The Russ Belville Show reminds you to never smoke and drive impaired. Hang out for a while. Share.
I think we're barred,
man. Take a little trip. Take a little trip.
You want answers?
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
You want answers?
You have offended my family.
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth.
And you have offended Shaolin Temple.
You can't handle the truth.
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
Radical rant.
All right, for today's radical rant, we're going to talk about speed. Methamphetamine, the poor white man's crack, if you will. And this comes from a story out of South Carolina, Lexington County, South Carolina. From MyrtleBeachOnline.com, it was entitled Meth Spreads Like Wildfire in South Carolina as Shake-and-Bake Cooking Method Gains Popularity. It opens by saying, last year, 6 years after South Carolina made people show ID to buy pseudoephedrine, the key ingredient in meth, the state law enforcement division reported 538 meth-related incidents in the state. That's four times the number reported in 2010. Now, some law enforcement experts think the only way to stop meth is to make its key ingredient a prescription drug. Now, for those of you who may not know much about this, and that would probably be most of you, since most people that use marijuana never move on to use any other sort of drug, you may not have a lot of experience with this. I speak to you as the voice of experience. In the mid-1990s, 94 through March of 95, I had a pretty serious methamphetamine habit. I was involved with a rock band. The drummer was a supplier, had a lot of interesting things he was involved in. And the long story short of it is I tried methamphetamine and I liked it. If I want to paraphrase the Katy Perry song, I snorted meth and I liked it. And it was very enjoyable. And this is one thing I think, you know, when we talk about drugs, we should be honest about this. And one of the things I think that is lost in the discussion of drugs and drug use is the fact that drugs are a whole lot of fun at first. They are. I mean, there is a reason why people do them. And it's not because they want to have their teeth fall out and pick sores on their face. It's because this drug use can be a whole lot of fun. I have some memories, the ones I can still recall, from my times of using methamphetamine in the 90s that are some of the most vivid, vibrant, and exciting memories of my life. I would not go back and do them over again, however. There are a lot of things about methamphetamine use that are seriously detrimental. And I'm not just talking about the sores and the teeth and all the twitching and stuff that people associate with typical methamphetamine abuse. It never got that bad for me. I was never at the point where I was going to be that bad. Did lose some weight. I got to tell you that. Did lose some weight. But it never got that bad for me. What I found to be the most devastating effect of using methamphetamine is how it really brings you to your lizard brain. Kind of disengages the frontal cortex, if you will, and gets you down to those lizard brain functions. Fight, flight, sex, food, thirst, hunger. And that can be a very dangerous thing to have people on. So when I come to these discussions about methamphetamine and its use and its abuse, the tie to marijuana for me is the fact that so much of our effort being focused on catching people using marijuana who primarily do not have a problem with it, generally, other than getting caught with it. All that focus on that distracts our very scarce resources from helping the people who've been caught in the web of methamphetamine addiction. And really, if you want to analyze why a lot of people use meth, there are some very simple reasons. Some of them have to do with being overworked. Some of the people in, you know, rural areas and poor areas that have to hold down two or three or four jobs just to survive are turning these stimulant drugs just to keep awake for their shifts. And that leads into a spiral of abuse. Other people have lives that are, you know, devastated by economics or personal situations. Maybe they've made bad choices in life, committed some crimes, have a bad background, bad credit, whatever it might be, who have nothing to lose, whose lives have become miserable and they see no way out. So why not have some fun? Why not do something that's a little more fun? And, you know, if you don't have a job to go to the next day, if you don't have any responsibilities to take care of, then, you know, being awake 48, 72 hours at a time doesn't really harm you that much, does it? People with something to lose are less likely to get involved in these situations. However, let me get back to the story, because this method, this was something new that I had learned about from this story. I'd heard references to it, Shake and Bake. I think I'd heard it maybe on Breaking Bad, to be honest with you. But this is from this story. Basically, they got blister packs of pseudoephedrine, you know, your pseudofeds or whatever, Coleman camp fuel, lithium batteries, rubber tubing, a few pieces of broken plastic. And the quote here is that meth makers no longer need a large building in the woods where they could store large pots and conceal tanks of anhydrous ammonia. Instead, the drug can be cooked in 16-ounce plastic drink bottles in a method known as one-pot cooks or shake and bake. Addicts can start the cook in a bottle, stuff it in a backpack, and drive down the road with the drug almost impossible to detect. Applying heat and or chemicals reduces the active ingredient in pseudoephedrine to meth. The small-scale chemical method of cooking methamphetamine that has been spreading across South Carolina is dangerous because the chemicals create a massive amount of pressure that can cause a fiery explosion if not handled carefully. The one-pot method, and they say these people that use it have to constantly relieve pressure from gases building inside by loosening and retightening the lids of the bottles. So the thought that there's people running around with two, three bottles, 16-ounce soda bottles of explosive chemicals in their backpack, and we're relying on them to remember to vent it every now and then, sounds pretty scary to me. And it sounds pretty scary to these people in South Carolina as well, who are now proposing that pseudoephedrine, the active ingredient that they need, the precursor chemical they need for this method, become a prescription drug, become a scheduled drug that you have to have a prescription from a doctor for. The reason why is that the current efforts to try to restrict the pseudoephedrine that include having to show ID. You have to show your ID to get the pseudoephedrine, and then you're scanned. The barcode is scanned and tracked in a database to make sure you're not buying more of it than you're supposed to get at any one particular time. The other thing they've done is they've made it so that you can only get so much per per visit, right? So this was 2 years ago. South Carolina tried to curb it by putting limits on the amount that you could purchase. But, well, and the drug is put behind pharmacy counters and pharmacists have to swipe your driver's license to see if the limit's been met. The Jeff Moore, the executive director of the South Carolina Sheriff's Association, said, quote, "I was absolutely convinced the electronic monitoring would stop the illegal sales in their tracks. But between 2007 and 2011, meth incidents in South Carolina increased more than 10 times to 267 from 26. Now, again, we have to address, when we start talking about drugs and these seriously dangerous and addictive drugs, how much prohibition goes into adding danger from these drugs. Right now, because of prohibition, because of trying to shut down people with a cold trying to get pseudoephedrine, and remember, that's the other thing that bothers me about this, is that we're going to have to create a law now where people with the sniffles, people with a cold, who the vast majority of people that use pseudoephedrine, Sudafed, use it for its intended purpose. They use it to not have the sniffles. But because a few people, thwarted by prohibition, will misuse it to make meth, the rest of us have to suffer. The rest of us have to jump through a hoop of going to the doctor to get something for our sniffles. And who benefits when we make something more expensive like that, make it a prescription drug like that? The companies that manufacture it, that can charge more for it now, and the doctors who get an extra doctor visit out of you when you just want to get some Sudafed over the counter. Now, again, these laws were proposed, and in many states, I think Oregon has something similar to this, but in many states, these laws were proposed. Let's restrict the pseudo, you know, from the law-abiding customers. Let's restrict the amount of pseudo they can get. Let's make them show IDs to get pseudo to cut down on the meth, and the meth is still here. And in South Carolina, according to this story, the meth is out of control. It's exploding. So these continued attempts to prohibit keep getting us this result of innovative manufacturing methods, getting it down to the small scale, single user slash cook. Used to be a meth lab was one meth lab out there in the woods, you know, out there in the desert, a trailer or something, with one or two cooks out there. And if it blew up, well, they died and they blew up some of the woods. Now it's all the meth users, or not all of them, but a lot of the meth users who now have their own self-contained meth lab in their backpack. That's the result prohibitionist thinking has gotten us. Because it continues to say, no, you cannot use meth. No, no, no. Instead of addressing why someone would want to use that incredibly destructive drug in the first place. In my experience, again, speaking from the voice of experience, part of the reason that I used meth was part of the same reason that I used cocaine. Or that I used amyl nitrate, or that I used LSD, or that I used mushrooms, or that I used any number of the drugs that I've taken in my life, and some of them that I shouldn't have, or that I certainly did not have the right mindset going into, was because all my life I'd been told marijuana was a drug. Marijuana is a drug. It's a terribly dangerous drug. It's an awful drug. It's Schedule One. It's in the worst class of drugs. And then I tried some. And I thought, this is drugs? Really? This is the drugs. This is the terribly dangerous, dirty, awful, terrible, addictive drugs. Well then, obviously I've been lied to about drugs. Obviously, they told me drugs would be terrible and you'd be addicted the first thing you took them, and I feel just fine. Let's try some of the others. That's literally the mindset I had during the late 1980s, early 1990s. You lied to me about this one, so you must have lied to me about the others. And I had to learn the hard way, especially when it came to methamphetamine, they weren't lying about that one. Those folks in the late 60s who learned the hard way that speed kills, they were right. It's a toxic, deadly, dangerous, addictive drug. But telling people just say no, restricting people's use of the precursor chemicals in lawful and safe ways for the most part, is not addressing the issue. What addresses the issue is finding out why these people turn to this drug in the first place, and if they are going to choose to turn to this type of drug, to provide them a safer type of alternative to this type of drug. This is what we have to recognize, and it's a tough thing for a lot of people to wrap their minds around, but it is this. Some people like to do drugs. Some people like to do really, really heavy drugs. And given that they're going to, given that as long as there is a demand, there will be a supply, if those things exist, what are we going to do about it? And we have seen time and time again over years and years and decades of prohibition that every time we try to prohibit something, the unintended consequence is worse than the problem we were trying to solve in the first place. We've seen it with respect to heroin, with respect to needles and rejecting clean needle exchange and rejecting, heroin for addicts or methadone or any of these type of things that have worked so well in Sweden and Britain and other countries. We've rejected all of those things because we just can't accept some adults might choose to use heroin, might become addicted to it. And we've refused to just accept that adults are going to make choices that some of us don't like. Some of those choices may be dangerous to them. The key we need to figure out is how do we keep their dangerous choices from being choices that inflict danger upon the rest of us. And when it comes to the methamphetamine addicts, I'll tell you what happened in my case. Nothing was stopping me from using meth at the time I was using it. Wasn't likely I was going to get caught because I wasn't seriously addicted. I wasn't, you know, awake for 5-6 days at a time and failing to have a job. I still worked while I was on meth. I had a job. Got wonderful reviews, did just fine, didn't resort to stealing or thuggery of any sort. But one night after a gig, because I was playing music professionally at the time as well, one night after a gig while loading my amplifier into the car, I twisted and felt a rip in my lower stomach, my lower intestinal area there, the groinal area, if you will. And it was very, very excruciatingly painful. Went to bed that night. And about 2-3 hours later, I woke up with, let's just say, small purple knotty bits, small cold purple knotty bits that had basically been strangled from any sort of blood flow, and was in a lot of pain. Got myself to the emergency room and had emergency hernia surgery that night, and doctor told me if I'd have waited an hour or two later, I'd be dead. So meth nearly killed me. If you don't know, meth can weaken the linings in your stomach and your guts and stuff. Hernias are not unheard of with meth. And when I got off meth, or when I got out of the emergency room and got out of the surgery and everything, of course, there was a lot of pain after the surgery. So, of course, they prescribed Vicodin. They prescribed an addictive prescription opiate, which I took a couple of and discovered, hey, I really like this. And I knew that was a problem. So I turned to Mary Jane, I turned to weed, I got rid of the Oxycontins, gave them back, turned them in, did nothing but smoke weed while I was recovering from the surgery, and to this day, weed and other things that grow have been the only drugs I take. Don't learn that lesson the hard way like I did. That's all the time we got here for Hour 1. We'll take this discussion into Hour 2. Toker Talk Radio. Phone lines are open at 971-533-7111. For Brian the Red, I'm Radical Russ. Thanks for joining us. And until next time, take care of each other, Tokers.
This is the Russ Belville Show. The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com.
Take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it.